Hello, this is Michael Zuber, and I wanted to thank you for choosing to spend a little time with One Rental at a Time. My life's mission is to help investors close 1 million rental properties. In order to tackle this crazy goal, I will need your help. If you like this episode or any of the content we produce, please share it on social media. If you get one of my books or perhaps one of our 500 cards, please take a selfie and tag One Rental at a Time. Now on with the show.
Folks, you have been waiting for this. Where is the opportunity Greg Dickerson is going to share with us where he is looking today, where his broken crystal ball says the future might be? Greg, how you doing?
Doing great, Michael. Good to see you.
Nice to see you as well. I know I would like to know, and my audience would like to know as well. You have been so right about so much. You've always told us good times never last, bad times never last. I think it's fair to say we're entering a bad time. But as you've told us over and over, that's where true opportunity, that's where wealth can be built. So where might you be looking for opportunity? Where might you suggest others at least start to get a little bit more educated, learn, and look for opportunity? What are you seeing?
Yeah, opportunities are found everywhere you look for them. So, you know, in the markets, as markets are, you know, trying to base and bottom out, you know, at some point there'll be generational moves that could be made in the markets, like we saw in 2009, like we saw at the bottom of 2018, and like we saw at the bottom of 2020. And there's been moves along the way here, you know, in some of these ranges. I mean, I you know, snatched a nice little 68% return on First Republic the other day. And, nice. But that was a gamble. That was a trade.
It was a trade. Yeah.
That was a trade. It was a huge gamble. They could have, you know, they could have gotten closed and I could have lost everything, but it worked out and I was willing to roll the dice. And, you know, I used a sum that I probably shouldn't have used, but, you know, it still worked out. I would have felt that if it didn't work.
There you go.
Kick myself in the pants, but I almost doubled my money in 2 hours. So
nice.
Yeah. So that one was worth waiting for. And so there's opportunities in the markets. There's going to be opportunities in crypto, you know, once the dust settles and things kind of level out.
Yeah, you know what? Let me ask you about that. It's something I don't follow. You do. Again, you have an amazing YouTube channel where you talk about it a bunch. Bitcoin has been on a run. And I think what's happening is some people are taking money out of the bank and moving it into Bitcoin. Is that just naive or is that actually happening, you think?
You know, not like the average everyday person,
no,
you know, and somewhat. That's not really what's going on. Bitcoin's a risk asset like anything else. So, okay. You know, the market makers and exchanges and big investors are pumping it to the narrative of what you just said. But again, there's not enough people that can do that at scale to drive the price that much. There might be, you know, some companies that might be moving some of their treasury, some investors moving some of their treasury into it for the short term. You know, but at the end of the day, you know, the markets have been up, gold has been up.
Yeah, gold's up.
You know, Bitcoin all across the board, pretty much the exact same price action, you know, incremental amounts. And, you know, Bitcoin's been kind of sitting the party out when the markets have been rallying. So it's just kind of catching up, you know, and then there's a whole narrative by the manipulators in the market, because it is a highly manipulated asset, just like markets are, to where, you know, they're pumping up that narrative, you know, store of value, banks are failing, put all your money in Bitcoin. So there might be a little bit of FOMO going on in there, you know, because everybody's calling for new all-time highs and the bull market is on and all that, which it could be. I'm not saying it's not for Bitcoin. I mean, this could be a proving point where, you know, Bitcoin's, you know, case is finally proven, use case is finally proven out potentially. So, you know, that opportunity is there and there is an opportunity in Bitcoin. I mean, if you bought at this level, you know, if it went down, it's going to come back, you know, most likely, there's no guarantees. So that's a good potential store of value for a lot of people right now. You know, gold has been up like crazy. I'm not sure what it's doing right this minute, but it shot up.
It was up this morning. It's getting really close to 2000. What I saw happening, and again, I think the average person confidence in the bank was lost a couple of weeks ago when people heard was my deposits aren't safe. So it didn't matter if you had $5,000. 50 grand or 500 grand, you were in a rush to get your money out of where you are. And some people bought Bitcoin, some people bought gold, and some people bought treasuries, but they got the money out of the banks. That was right
or
wrong.
The bulk of it went. So the bulk of it went to other banks and treasuries and money market accounts, not Bitcoin, crypto, and stocks. Some went in there. The pump is the Fed pivot narrative. That's what the pump's
all
about.
It's coming. Yeah,
the
Fed cut by July.
As soon as they jumped in on SVB, everybody called it a bailout. They said, that's it. The Fed's going to cut rates. It's all over. The banks are collapsing. They're going to step in and they're going to start QE all over again. So that's why markets are pumping, because of that narrative.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're going to find out if that's true when the Fed, you know, when Powell speaks on Wednesday. It could be true. And if it is, the markets, you know, it's going to be hard to say what's going to happen with the markets if he's done and says, hey, you know, how they'll interpret that. But at the end of the day, if they started cutting rates and really juicing the markets, you know, they would pop for a little while. But then, just like back in 08-09, you know, the market bottomed after, you know, they pivoted. So markets typically bottom after they pivot. So they might go test lows again and then bounce from there. But that's all this is. This is a Fed pivot narrative, a QE narrative, because a lot of people were calling what the Fed did with the banks and Treasury. They're calling that QE, and it's not. People are saying, you know, all this liquidity is pumped in the market. Some people are saying the banks are buying Bitcoin. I mean, it's just, you know, the average person did not go take their money out of the bank and put it in Bitcoin. No, they're absolutely not going to do that. What they did was they went and put it in money market, they put it in treasuries, and they put it in other banks.
Yeah, they got it out of the banks or the big four. I mean, Bank of America, I think I read somewhere, went up $160 billion in deposits in 4 days.
Yeah, that's where the money went. You know, the average person's just not going to do that. So anyways, there's opportunities there. And, you know, that, you know, a return to all-time highs in Bitcoin is probably very likely. It's very probabilistic. This year, next year, who knows? You know, stock markets return to all-time highs. You know, it's potential. Some people say it might be 10 years. Who knows? It all depends on the economy and what happens. But what I do know is there's a lot of stress in the real estate market. There's a lot of stress on businesses, and there's a lot of people retiring. So, you know, other opportunities are going to be businesses, taking over businesses from people who are retiring, because you can get them 100% financed. You don't have to put any money in them. You can roll them up and combine them and create a nice little exit. And then real estate, same thing. There's going to be a lot of distressed sellers where you can just step in and take those things over. There's going to be a lot of people that have 2 to 3% interest loans on their primary residence. You can step into that and either, you know, use it, rent it, do whatever. So, you know, those are where your big opportunities are going to come. The key is you got to make sure that we're through the potential disaster that we're facing right now. You know, this is not the time to be taking moves in the markets, moves in, you know, crypto, but it is a time to be taking moves into real estate, moves into, you know, businesses if they work, you know, right now and look like there's, you know, potential upside.
Yeah, one of the things I love about our conversation, it really goes back to my aha moment from like 3 years ago when we were talking every week, was the Rich Dad Poor Dad book, right? I read Rich Dad Poor Dad. In fact, after our discussion, I read it again, and I still come out of that damn book thinking like Robert and Kim buy real estate. You read the book and you want to be Rich Dad. And you did that in real life, right? You bought businesses, you rolled it up, you added. And you've always told this audience, right? Being an entrepreneur, roll up businesses. I think you're absolutely right. Another person I'm following lately is Cody Sanchez, I think her name is. Mm-hmm. She's talking about going and creating a baby Berkshire Hathaway. I think that is such an awesome idea. 100% financing, direct from the seller. It's easier to take over a business than create one. It's got customers, it's got all of that. Just tell us more about buying businesses, evaluating business, because I think there's legacy wealth to be built in this crisis with that mindset.
Yeah. So it all goes back to a motivated seller. You know, there's a lot of people that are aging out of their companies and ready to retire, and there's nobody coming up behind them, because that's, you know, that's again, the manufacturing service industries, whether they're home services, B2B services, B2C services, you know, people are not going into those fields. So there's some great businesses out there that, you know, different levels, $1 million, $5 million, $10 million EBITDA, you know, type companies that you can step into, and the owners will finance you because there's no other buyers. You know, and they're just looking for, you know, a good solid retirement and to,
yeah, you know, they want cash flow monthly. They don't need a check.
So you just got to find out, you know, what you got to find motivated sellers and look in areas where, you know, there's, you can either roll up other complementary ancillary businesses like I did. I was a general contractor builder. So I rolled up a bunch of service-based businesses that were complementary around that. And then I had some that weren't. I had some retail restaurants and a, you know, gymnastics, trampoline, cheerleading school, you know, that was a passion project and helping somebody, but still it was a good business. So those are the types of things you want to look at. And then your skill set, you know, what are you good at? What are you interested in? You know, what can you run? Because at the end of the day, you got to be able to lead people. You know, if you're not going to be an owner operator, you have to be able to find a good operator, and you got to be able to lead that team and continue to run. So you need to understand the numbers and the economics and marketing and all of the components that go into that business. And then think about, what are the essential businesses that did well during and through the pandemic and are going to continue to do well in a recessionary time in an economy? And those are generally going to be like service-based businesses, the things that you need, the core goods and services that you've got to have to sustain life. You know, that's where a lot of your opportunities are. And Cody Sanchez is good. She talks about a lot of, you know, really neat, interesting, different kinds of businesses that, you know, you can get into very easily. And a lot of them are just the simple service, boring service businesses that people aren't even thinking of.
Car washes, laundromats, you know, just things like that. So I think it's a wonderful
car washes are becoming more and more popular. Why? Because it's a convenient service. Yep. It survived in the pandemic. You don't need labor necessarily if they're automated, you know, so laundromats, same kind of thing. You know, now there's nuances and, you know, all those different, you know, things that you need to know that goes along with it. You need to know the business, the numbers and, you know, all the, you know, data and details around it. And, you know, a car wash isn't going to work just anywhere all the time, you know, so you got to be aware of that. But, you know, you want a cash generating machine that's going to, you know, continue to throw off cash in any economic environment or situation. And people might say, yeah, if we're in a recession, nobody's going to go to a car wash, wash their car. Sure, they will. Everybody has money in all economic cycles, you know, or people have money in all economic cycles and will spend money in any economic cycle. You just got to make sure that you know who your audience is and that they have money and that they'll continue to spend it.
Yeah. So, you know, it's obvious we talked about in episode number one, the crisis, we're in banking crisis. I'm going to use a sports analogy because I'm not sure how else to do it. A baseball game, 9 innings. What would you say? Are we in the first, second inning? You think we're further along? Where do you think we might be at in this environment?
Well, so most economists and analysts don't think we've hit stage three in the market business cycle, stage one, stage two, stage three, stage four. So most people don't think we've hit stage three yet, that we're just coming out of stage two. So that would be second inning, you know, or second base or however you want to put it. You know, and I would agree. So again, if you go back to.
So we're really early.
Yeah. So if you go back to 2008, the banks started failing about this time, right as the markets were coming over the cliff. You know, we hadn't even dropped yet. That 2009, a year later, is when Lehman failed and the big shoe dropped. So yeah, we're just on the beginning cusp, and it's a really interesting, delicate time, you know, right now because of where we're at with inflation, where we're at with, you know, monetary policy, where we're at with the banks. I mean, you know, we're on this thin ice where one little crack can take the whole thing away. You know, and then you go off and you get that big flush and you get a big reset. But I think what the consensus is, and this is, there's a great video out there on YouTube about the whole liquidity pump that we've seen over the last couple of years. I'm going to look it up while we're talking, that goes over what's been done over the last few years pumping. It's called, hang on, where'd it go here? I'll find it. One second. Oh, here it is. The Age of Easy Money. So look up The Age of Easy Money. It's a Frontline PBS documentary called The Age of Easy Money. And what it's doing is it's interviewing anybody and everybody that would have been around this since 2009, this whole QE zero interest rate, more specifically recently, just came out like a week ago, really in depth, where they're talking to Neil Kashkari and former Fed members and everybody who was on the inside of all this, and Noriel Roubini and all these people. The consensus is, the bills do, you know, we've been pumping, and at some point trillions of dollars that have been put into the economy has to unwind and come out. Values have to get reset. But on the other hand, there's trillions of dollars out there that needs to stay at work and go to work and be put to work. So it's really tricky, you know, how this thing comes out.
One of the things I love that you said there that I don't think a lot of people remember, and this is actually about the Great Recession. Somebody can check my data points, and I know somebody will, but I believe Bear Stearns failed first right around this date in history, March 23rd or 18th or something like that.
Yeah.
And then
it was actually the same weekend that SVB failed.
Right. Almost to the day. Right. And then Lehman Brothers, which was the next big bank. Most people think those things happened close together. They were actually six quarters apart.
Yeah.
One was March of, I think, 2009, and the other was, or 2008, and the other one was September of 2009, I believe. Or they weren't together. A lot of people think they happened like in the same month. These were
Lehman was almost a year later in September 2009. So March 2008 to September 2009.
Yeah, so 18 months.
The bottom was March of 2009. So you were still 6 months, you know, to the bottom of the market. You know, September. 6 months.
Yeah. So this is why it's important. I keep telling people this is everybody thinks it's going to be like a Wile E. Coyote moment where it just falls off. And they all think it's the COVID recession again. They all think it's a V-shaped recovery. Like, no, this all of this takes time.
rightfully so, because that's what the Fed has shown everybody in the last several crises. So once we finally bottomed in 2008-09, it was off to the races then.
But it took 3 years to get there.
2017, 2018, they tried QT and they tried to unwind.
Q4-18.
Bottom out. And the pandemic, the bottom out. But that was a fire hose cannon of trillions of dollars.
Yeah, that was overkill.
Yeah, zero interest rates and all that. And even then, it took a while for all that to really trickle in. You know, I mean, that still lasted. Well, it happened in about a year, so actually it wasn't that bad. But I think, you know, you have to get, but that's the thing. There's so much money that's been created. And, you know, the Fed can't really suck it out of the system. The only way to suck it out of the system.
Can't do it that fast. Yeah.
You got to tax it out. That's the only way you can suck it out of the system. You know, so the question is, where are we going to base this time and where does it go from here? That's what's fascinating. And that's where your opportunities are, because we're going to base higher, obviously. Some people are calling for a return to, I think, 2009 lows. Some people are, and even beyond that, some people are
the stock market 2009.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Some people are calling for a return back to the base of 2009. I don't know if I agree with that. But I think we're going to reach a base at some point and then go from there. And, you know, I mean, nobody knows. What I do know is there's a ton of money in the system and there's a ton of money that needs to allocate, needs to go to work. Life insurance companies, sovereign wealth funds, debt funds, pension funds. I mean, they have to pay dividends. They have to pay, you know, pension payments. They have to pay, you know, their investors. So there's, you know, there's a lot of money out there that has to go to work and needs to allocate. So when you have that and you put all these other trillions of dollars on top of it, that money's got to go somewhere.
Yeah. Wild times. Well, Greg, I appreciate you coming back for these three great discussions. Where can people find you?
Yeah, gregdickerson.com. That's where all my info is. Go check it out.
Thank you, buddy.